Welcome all sports fans. On this podcast,
no sport is left behind.
I'm Justin Williams.
I'm Cabrera Duran, and this is our brother from Down Under,
me, Wallace Bruce.
We are the Pro Sports Podcasters,
filling you in on the latest news from the world of sports.
Damn ready.
Yeah.
Let's get right into it with what's going on in the NFL. And I want to stress right now that we're not going to talk about the conference games. We're actually recording this Sunday morning, so this is before the conference games are being played. We both have our own theories on who's going to win or lose these particular games. I guess we can give that. We can give that before they're played. I'll let you start.
Cove, you know that I'm a big fan of Green Bay at home in Wisconsin. It'll be nice and cold in the Battle of the Bays. So I feel like Green Bay are going to take out that contest. I feel like we might agree on that. What we're not going to agree on is the other game, Buffalo and Kansas City. I still believe that Buffalo can handle the passing attack of Kansas City, but it'll be close. So I'm actually going to shock the world and tell you all that Buffalo will end up in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that would be a shock. That would be an incredible shock because I just don't see the Buffalo Bills having the offensive chops at this point to get past Kansas City. I like what Josh Allen can do with his legs, so that's going to play a factor, but I just think that the combination of Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce is too much for the Buffalo defense to deal with. And don't be surprised, even though he's injured, you know, he's been cleared from concussion protocol and that sort of thing. Don't be surprised if you see even more use of the running backs out of the backfield in this particular situation. So I expect Mahomes to really be slinging it all over the field in this particular contest. And I don't think Buffalo just has enough offensive weapons to keep up.
No, that's a good point because Mahomes, he's immense. Like, he showed that in the Super Bowl, even the run-up to the Super Bowl. Teams would get out to these leads, and then he'd just say, okay, is that all you got? All right, let me get my boy Tyreek. Let me get my guy Travis. I'm going to throw it to them. I'm going to beat you with mismatches all game long. The reason why I feel like Buffalo have a shot is because if they can manage Tyreek Hill in the slot, typically goes up against the weaker cornerback in the slot, force him outside up against guys like Levi Wallace, Tre'Davious White, they can make big plays now. They can get an interception. As I said, two very interesting matchups. You got the two older quarterbacks in NFC, the two younger quarterbacks who could be the quarterbacks of the next decade that we're talking about in the AFC. Cole, I got to ask you, because after these games, we'll get to awards night. Who's okay. Your MVP in the NFL?
This season?
Yeah.
I got to go with Aaron Rodgers.
Interesting.
Yeah, it pains me to do so, but I have to go with Aaron Rodgers. He showed me more than enough this year to prove that he hasn't lost a step.
Mm.
Right? There's a lot of talk about him coming toward the end of his career at this point, and I think that was enough to motivate him to show him that, look, I'm just as good as I ever was, if not better.
That's a very good point you raised, the end of career comment, because remember how he came into the league. He came in as the guy that was going to replace Brett Favre.
That's right.
And they made him sit. He even had to sit on draft night. Teams were passing on him. Since then, he's had a chip on his shoulder. And then he went out and won the Super Bowl. The front office of Green Bay, it looked like with their moves in the draft this season, when they drafted Jordan Love as early as they did, they were saying, okay, we're going to find your successor now. Another chip on the shoulder. Because Rodgers wanted help. He wanted another wide receiver to go with Devontae Adams. He didn't really get it. So he said, okay, this is how you're going to do it. I'm going to show my own front office. I'm going to show my fan base. I'm going to show the league that this is what's up. And every week, it's just been him and Devontae Adams and Robert Tonyan, the tight end as well. Aaron Jones mixed in for good measure. He's just been throwing touchdowns. It's been a scorched earth tour. He's thrown something like 50 touchdowns. He wants everyone to know that he's not done. Do you give Patrick Mahomes a shot, though, at MVP?
I do because of how much the league values him, right? And once again, of course, KC finds themselves in the mix, and rightly so. They've had a great season. But has it been Patrick Mahomes doing? I really don't see it that way, okay? So how you mentioned Rodgers wasn't given help in the offseason, right? There was no help added.
Mm.
It was all on him to carry Green Bay on the strength of his arm to where they're at now. Mahomes, everyone would probably argue that KC had enough offense to go head-to-head against anyone. Mm. And what do they do in the first round? They draft an offensive player. Mm-hmm. They draft Clyde Edwards-Helaire to give him one more weapon to an already ridiculous arsenal. And they used Helaire to good effect before he went down to injury.
That's interesting you raised Edwards-Helaire, because I guess I'm putting on my fantasy hat here, because the big debate in the fantasy world was Clyde Edwards-Helaire or Jonathan Taylor, which was the better pick for fantasy. Kansas City took Clyde Edwards-Helaire early in the first round, went out and got Le'Veon Bell via trade.
That's right.
They then mixed in Darrell Williams. They've mixed him in quite a bit for good measure. Is Clyde Edwards-Helaire the answer running back for Kansas City?
I think given their style of play and the weapons they have around, he can be. Mm-hmm. I personally like Jonathan Taylor over Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Okay? Mm-hmm. In fantasy and as a running back, mm-hmm. I prefer both situations. Right. Only in some cases, I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire could have been the better fantasy pick, provided he went somewhere else.
Right.
Right. There's too many targets in Kansas City to give him his fair share. And he did get a good number of touches and had some great fantasy performances, so you can't take that away from him. But he's enough for Kansas City, in that Kansas City doesn't require a power back to carry to really carry the team. Mm. So having a versatile back with his skill set, it makes total sense. But getting back to your original question, it's for that reason, Helaire, Kelsey, Tyreek, Watkins, when you have all these weapons, you do not have to be the best quarterback to achieve. And I think what people seem to forget is Mahomes had a lot of mediocre games this season. Really mediocre games that were won primarily on the backs of other players, right? Kelsey stepped it up, or Hill made one massive play that made the difference. And it wasn't Mahomes' doing.
Right.
It was that team dynamic, that ridiculous offense that they have. Whereas with the Green Bay Packers, it was really in Rodgers' hands quite often to win those games. Mm-hmm. He couldn't rely on anyone but maybe Davante Adams. Mm-hmm. And one target doesn't take away from your own performances.
Mm-hmm. Kansas City also, I remember vividly against Atlanta and Miami, Mahomes was under pressure. He was getting beat up and he was throwing the ball. I think he got picked off a few times in those games. But like you said, other guys stepped up. Like Daniel Sorensen made plays. There were turnovers. The opposition was getting put back on their own offense. So Mahomes was able to get out of jail in those games.
That's right.
So it was a champion team, whereas Rodgers really is the most valuable player. Here's the deal. We saw this last week in the divisional round. Mahomes got injured. Chad Haney finished the game.
Correct.
They won.
He didn't just finish the game. He finished the game in impressive fashion.
Right. He didn't just manage it. He got them over the line. Aaron Rodgers goes down. I don't know if Tim Boyle or Jordan Love is going to be the guy that's able to get them over the line.
No, there isn't enough pieces there that backup can lean on in order to make the difference.
Right.
I argued last year that particular Kansas City Chiefs team would have gone to the Super Bowl if they had someone like Stafford. They would have still gone to the Super Bowl.
Matt Stafford, you've raised a good name there, Cole. Because as we record today, it has come to our attention through the good people on Twitter that Matthew Stafford and the Detroit Lions are going to part ways. I guess the new coach, Dan Campbell, has come in and has probably evaluated the situation, probably had a chat with Stafford and asked what he wants. And Stafford has been a loyal servant to Motor City, but he probably wants a championship. So they're going to part ways this offseason.
That really surprised me. I actually expected Stafford to be a Detroit Lion till the end of his career. He just has that almost loyalty
right
to his club that you don't see too often anymore. But I think in this particular situation, when they talked it out, he realized the best option for him was to move on. Mm-hmm. And it was an equitable decision to split. Neither side will be upset with it.
Right. And now the question is, where does he go? And also, what does that mean for the knock-on effects in terms of the rest of the league? Now, if you ask me, as a 49ers fan, Matthew Stafford would be perfect in the Bay because he has an offensive line that will keep him upright, weapons that he can throw to, both short in George Kittle, intermediate, Deebo Samuel, the running backs as well, and even deep threat as well. So they just need to make a trade happen. I know John Lynch is very aggressive, so if it was me, I would send pick 12, Jimmy Garoppolo, and maybe Travis Benjamin, because Detroit need wide receivers. And in return, I would get Stafford and Jamie Collins, because Niners could do with another linebacker.
See, I've got some skin in the game here as well, because I'm a Denver Broncos fan.
Right.
And we did not see what we wanted to see out of Drew Locke this season. No knock on Locke. He went through some injury concerns. There was no preseason. His entire offense was basically rookies. So the opportunity to gel there wasn't quite there.
Right.
Right? The fact that Cortland Sutton went down basically before the season even began was brutal, because that was his only reliable target from last season. Mm. But I could see Stafford going to Denver and tutoring Locke for at least one season. There'd be a competition between the two of them. And then you get to decide, what do you do from there? I think you sign Stafford to, say, a two-year deal. Mm-hmm. And give him a chance to prove himself and win the job, which I think he would at least year one. Mm. And then you evaluate Locke for one more season before you decide what to do with him when his contract runs out. So I could see him going to Denver for sure, especially with all those young weapons for him to throw to.
And as we know with Denver, they just got a new GM with John Elway basically going upstairs to
promoting himself.
Right, a broader role in the organization. So they have George Patton there. And Patton has come out and said that they feel like they can get more out of Locke. To me, that says, yes, they're going to bring in a veteran. And it also says that everything is on the table in terms of the coaching. This year is going to be a year where he feels things out with the team, sees what works. And if things don't go the right way in terms of the results, he's going to bring in his guys.
That's right. Mm-hmm. I see that happening big time. Mm-hmm. And since we're on the subject now, by the way, I never said it, but yeah, I agree with Nee Wallace Bruce that the Green Bay Packers are going to win this weekend.
Okay, excellent.
Right, I'll just throw that out there right now before we move on.
That means we can keep recording. I like it. Right?
But I want to talk a little bit about the quarterback carousel I expect this offseason. There's going to be a lot of recognizable names in new places, mm-hmm. and there may even potentially be a couple of retirements because of what happened this season or what didn't happen this season. Mm. And we've already talked about Stafford. Obviously, Deshaun Watson is going to find a new home. I don't know where that's going to be. Rumor has it he's interested in going to the Jets. That kind of surprises me, but maybe there's a reason there.
Well, Cole, for me, the Jets make sense because of their cap position. They have a lot of cap space, and they can probably give Houston what they want in terms of picks and or a player like Sam Darnold. Houston, as we know, they don't have a first round pick because of previous trades that were made, and they don't have a lot of cap space. So we don't know who their coach is. They're the last head coaching situation to be sorted out. So
that's
it could
right.
be Josh McCown, who was on the practice squad this year. It doesn't look like it'll be Eric Bieniemy. It might be, but the way things are with Deshaun Watson, who seemingly wants out, it seems like it will be a full rebuild in Houston. Now, Stafford could end up there. Stafford is from Texas. I know he's from North Texas, but still, being able to play in your home state may swing him towards the Texans. As for Deshaun Watson, he's another guy that would go well in the 49ers offense. Kyle Shanahan would love a guy that can be a part of the passing game with his dynamic receivers and also add a little bit with his legs. So he would go very well there on a team that is trying to get back to the Super Bowl, was a quarter and a half away from winning it, but just needed a little bit more quality at quarterback. So that would be interesting. Cole, where do you think Deshaun Watson will end up?
Well, I mean, when he mentioned, and I guess it's in the rumor mill now, that it could be maybe his number one spot that he wanted to go to the Jets. Mm. The only reason I saw behind it, one, sure, was the cap space. The fact that he could help create the team he wanted. Mm. And that was a big part of it. And that rumor has it he was upset with the Texans because they never discussed it with him as to who should be coming in.
Right.
Right? And I think with the Jets situation, he would have a lot of input as to what he would like them to do in the offseason. So that would be one of the takes on that. Mm-hmm. Another take is I think the Indianapolis Colts have already decided to part ways with Phillip Rivers, mm-hmm. that's not going to go another season.
Right.
And the Colts have a ready-made team, mm-hmm. right? That team is you just plug in one great quarterback and there's a good chance you can go all the way.
Right.
So that looks very appealing to me if I was Deshaun Watson and I'm interested in potentially winning a championship, I would be considering the Indianapolis Colts. I don't know if they're in talks yet or if that's one of his actual options, but it would be for me.
It would make a footballing sense. I just feel like the Texans, they wouldn't want to trade within their division because that would be painful. That's effectively two losses chalked up, a rebuilding team up against your former quarterback who's really wants to get revenge against you. New York, that would be good because you get Deshaun, you have a new coach, Robert Saleh. You probably attract a cornerback like Richard Sherman, follow him across because he followed him from Seattle to 49ers. You're probably going to get someone like Allen Robinson. That could become suddenly a sexy place to play.
That's right.
It could be like the Miami Heat in basketball where players actually want to go to the Jets. They want to be a part of this new project. Thinking about the Colts, their coach is Frank Reich, the offensive coordinator from the Super Bowl winning Eagles 2 or 3 years ago. We know that Carson Wentz, he hasn't had a good season. He's been replaced by Jalen Hurts.
Blatantly replaced.
It wasn't hidden. It was, you are being benched for Jalen Hurts.
That's right.
That was what's going on. So, for me, the Eagles trading Wentz out of the conference to his former offensive coordinator, especially considering that the new Eagles coach came from the Colts in Sirianni. That's just a sensible move for me.
It is, and I think Wentz is at an affordable price tag right now. I mean, he's still making ridiculous money, but as the cost of QBs have gone up, he's now in a spot where you can get it's funny that you can call him a veteran, but at this point you might consider him a veteran quarterback with real experience at his price tag.
Right.
It's whether or not what we saw this year in Philadelphia is really indicative of what he's capable of, or I have a feeling maybe that he was playing pretty injured the majority of the season behind a brutal offensive line.
There we go. The offensive line, that was key because he got beat up in Philadelphia. And this is not just this season. It's been the last 2 or 3 seasons where Wentz has been beat up so many times he just ends up injured. He's had no production. He would go to a place like Indianapolis where he's got a nice wall of 5 guys in front of him.
A great running back to hand it off to.
He can actually look up from the snap and see what's in front of him. He'll have Michael Pittman Jr. and Paris Campbell. Oh, it'll be nice. And that brings me back to Stafford as well. Stafford would also get beat up. He'd also get injured. Hopefully, wherever he goes, he gets a decent offensive line. Speaking of places with a nice offensive line, well, used to have a nice offensive line with Dallas. They had a lot of injuries this season.
A ridiculous number of injuries.
So, with that in mind, one of those injuries was their quarterback, Dak Prescott. And you saw how things went. They went from a team that was potentially a Super Bowl contender to scrapping and scuffling to get into the playoffs. And that didn't even happen. Will Dallas bring back Dak?
That's a tough question. Man, that is a tough question because to bring him back cost a bucket load. Mm-hmm. And if they bring him back, they bring him back on the franchise tag again. I don't think he gets a contract, especially after the severity of that injury. So you got one more season out of a guy at a significant number, and you're not 100% sure he's the guy. I think they do franchise him one more season, but if it were me, I wouldn't. I'd be looking to try and unload that at this point. It's just, I think they do. Because of what they've achieved with him, the numbers are great. Mm. You just need someone to develop a system that's more than numbers. It just seems like, for some reason, Dallas has all the talent, and they put up great offensive numbers, but they can't win games. That's my only knock on Dak. Mm-hmm. His personal stats look great, but it doesn't translate to great wins. Mm. For the Dallas Cowboys, at least the current version of the Dallas Cowboys.
I'll meet you halfway on that because Dak has great numbers. But I think in terms of the cap situation, you can't ding him for it. What the Dallas Cowboys did with Zeke Elliott, I feel like they might be having some buyer's remorse when they saw the production out of Tony Pollard towards the end of the season.
Yeah.
So if I'm Dallas, I'm going to keep my phone on. I'm going to keep the sound off my ringtones.
You're trying to deal Zeke?
I will deal Zeke away, and I will just roll with Tony Pollard, and I will get another running back in the draft.
It won't happen. The cost is too high.
Should happen. Hey, Zeke went to Ohio State. Who's coaching in Jacksonville? His former coach, Urban Meyer. They have cap space. He will go very well with Trevor Lawrence.
I think Jacksonville's found themselves a gem in Robinson at a significant discount. They're going to add Trevor Lawrence, and they know that's going to cost them big money down the line. I don't think they trade for a high-ticket running back in Zeke Elliott. I just don't think Zeke Elliott is tradable at this point, at that cost. I don't think he's tradable.
But that's the thing. Why would you pay someone like Zeke so much when you get the same level of production from someone who was brought in off the street like James Robinson? I think this highlights how maybe the running back can be faded a little bit. Unfortunately, it's sad, but maybe you can fade running back in terms of contracts and get more for less.
Full respect to Zeke Elliott for making the first move and getting that contract. That holdout was genius at that time. Mm-hmm. When you looked at the lineup of players who were waiting to get paid by Dallas, to be the first one at the table and push all his chips in and say, pay me or I'm gone, was the smartest move he could make. Because I don't think if that happened, he would have gotten paid.
No, absolutely not. Because remember, there were three guys that need to get paid. Zeke is paid, Dak is on the tag, and Amari Cooper.
That's right.
So someone is going to miss out there.
Currently, it's Dak.
Would you really want to jeopardize what is now the most important position on the field? One thing that is looking up for Dallas, though, is the new defensive coordinator, Dan Quinn. I feel like he's going to structure that team because they were flip-flopping this season. Mike Nolan hasn't gone from a 3-4 to a 4-3, and players weren't really knowing where they stood on the field, it looked like. I feel like Dan Quinn's going to bring some structure, and Dallas defense is going to get better. Because you raised a point before, Cole, about the results. Part of that's on the defense, because Dallas, you can throw on them. Teams are just torching them.
That's right.
But Quinn is going to bring stability on that side of the ball. And that'll help guys like Dak. Dak will have something to protect when he goes on offense.
For a division to be that terrible and have a team like the Dallas Cowboys in it, with the talent they have on their roster, to fail to make the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean,
something's got to change there. Something's got to change.
Yeah, you talk about the football team. Like, they had a new coach. They had three or four quarterbacks come through.
Yeah, whole carousel of quarterbacks.
Right. So, you got to ask the question, is Cam Newton going to end up in Washington? Because I think he's a strong bet to return and reunite with Ron in D.C.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Like, we're back on that carousel again. Like, there's so many quarterbacks that who knows where they can end up. Mm. Who knows? And speaking of Cam Newton and the Patriots, rumor has it Patricia's going back.
Yep, he's going to be back in the Foxborough in an assistant capacity. So I don't think Stafford will follow him there, but it's a possibility.
Well, rumor has it he makes a pretty good coffee, so Belichick will be happy about that.
Right. Okay. Hey, football's no rocket science, all right?
I hate Patricia.
Before we get on to the next topic, I got to point out that the Pro Sports Podcasters, we are on social media. We have embraced social media, and we're on Instagram. So be sure to follow us out there on @pro.sports.podcasters. Follow, enjoy our content, and see who we're interviewing. You won't be disappointed. All right. So here at the Pro Sports Podcasters, we believe that no sport should ever be left behind.
None.
Ever. And with that, we're proud to be connected with the newest franchise in the NWHL, the Toronto Six. As part of that, our very own Justin Williams is following the team as they take part in the bubble this season at Lake Placid. He will be a part of each and every one of the press conferences as the Toronto franchise embarks on their first ever season in the Women's Professional Hockey League. Cole, you actually saw them play over the weekend.
The Six played their first game on Saturday, but unfortunately it ended in a 3-0 loss, but it actually sounds worse than it actually was. They generated multiple scoring opportunities, but couldn't capitalize. And Leila Kilduff of the Metropolitan Riveters scored twice, and there was an empty netter to close out the game, and that's how we got the 3-0 loss. So it wasn't actually as bad as most people might think, just looking at the score. The Toronto Six showed great promise on offense, fantastic play on the offensive zone. There was a number of times where I couldn't even pick out what they were potentially doing. I was calling for them to shoot, but they were actually setting up a perfect position in the slot or someone across the middle, and it just looked fantastic in the end result. So they definitely have some offensive chops, but they had routinely difficult times dealing with Rivers forechecking and clearing their defensive zone. So that's something they're definitely going to have to correct immediately if they want to make an impact in their inaugural season. This was my first time watching the NWHL, and I wasn't disappointed. Okay, I did not know what to expect, but I got right into it maybe halfway through the first period, and I was focused on what was going on. It was fantastic hockey. Good. And even better than I had expected. So I'm going to be definitely watching a few more games, including the games being played later on today. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I was so into it that during the very beginning of the game, both Justin and I were watching it through their Twitch feed. Mm-hmm. Be sure to follow the NWHL on Twitch, mm-hmm, because that's where the games are being broadcast right now.
So friends, the address is twitch.tv/NWHL.
Right, so make sure you check them out, because you won't be disappointed with some great hockey. During that first period, right in the beginning, Justin's feed froze. He's got terrible internet service where he's at. And whenever he's watching intensive video, sometimes things will just freeze up on him. And as a result of that, I gave him a quick play-by-play of what was happening. And you got to listen to this.
Steals the puck in the offensive zone. Working behind the net.
Oh, I'm glad you can see. My stream stopped.
I'm glad you can see. And they dump it into the Canadian zone. I guess I want to say the Canadian, because it's the only Canadian team.
Yeah.
Oh, couldn't clear the puck. Forecheck.
I'm glad you're on it. I'm stuck at 19:31.
Oh, got her. Nice save.
All right, I'm going to refresh. I'm going to go expand.
Shot for the point. It's a goal.
Oh, I missed it.
First goal goes to the Metropolitan Riveters. Deflection shot from the right point.
So that should give you a very good example of how into it I was in the moment. And keep in mind, that's the Riveters scoring against our team, and I was still excited. So you're in for some pretty good hockey if you tune in and watch them on Twitch.
Excellent. We'll definitely be doing that.
And don't forget to tune in to our Instagram and Twitter feeds. Twitter, we are P Podcasters. Instagram, we are pro.sports.podcasters, where Justin Williams will give you the 411 on what happened in the latest games and what's going on with the Toronto Six.
Athletes that have personalities that rub people up the wrong way.
Go for it.
Tell me about one Conor McGregor.
I think a lot of people were cheering loud enough to be heard next door. When Conor McGregor got his ass knocked out by Dustin Poirier last night.
Right.
And I'll be the first to say that I didn't think that was going to happen. Okay, I think the majority of the world was shocked when Poirier found himself standing above McGregor, looking down at him with the victory. Okay, I think most of us thought that wasn't going to happen. I actually saw it the other way around. I saw McGregor knocking out Poirier like he did in the first match. But what I'll give full credit to Poirier for is that he came in with a obvious game plan that he stuck to. And I think that's where a lot of previous MMA fighters have taken losses to McGregor, in that whatever game plan their coach or trainers had come up with goes out the window, except in that octagon against McGregor, because McGregor gets into their head so much. Mm-hmm. And they end up fighting sloppy and getting knocked out as a result of that. Whereas with Poirier, from the moment he stepped into that octagon, it was obvious that he stuck to a very smart game plan. And the two things that jumped out to me was, one, the early takedown he scored, because no one expected that. If you even looked at Conor McGregor, or if you looked at his eyes when he got taken to the mat, he was shocked himself. Mm-hmm. He didn't expect Poirier to come out and try and take him to the ground. Wasn't that Poirier did much there? He didn't inflict any damage. McGregor wasn't down for very long. But everyone knows that one of McGregor's few weaknesses is his gas tank. And every time you get taken down and you're forced to work your way back up, that takes a lot out of you cardio-wise. So that was the first thing that jumped out to me I was impressed with. But the second thing that really jumped out to me was I'm always talking about how McGregor leaves his front leg way forward, way out there, begging to be leg kicked, begging for it. Mm-hmm. And Poirier did that from the very beginning. He was chopping at that leg, chopping at that leg. Wasn't necessarily going at it extremely hard, but he was doing enough damage to make it an issue in that when the second round started, it was obvious that Conor was making a concerted effort to now protect it. And that took Conor a little bit out of his game. Although I would have given the first round to Conor. He landed some great shots, some devastating blows, and I got to hand it to Poirier. His chin's improved because he took some solid shots on the button. Mm-hmm. And it may have rocked him a little bit, but not to the point that put him in any trouble. In the second round, Poirier then started to press more, going for more damaging blows. Once he tagged him well and saw that Conor was in even just the slightest bit of trouble, he jumped on it immediately. And that's something else I'll give him full credit for, because I've noticed, again, in previous fights with against Conor McGregor, where his opponents have had him in a little bit of trouble, but were weary about stepping in, going for the kill, because they were so afraid of that left hand catching them when they dropped their guard, that they allowed Conor to sort of recover and get back into it. Poirier played it smart, safe, until he saw his opening, and then pounced. And it was over within 10 seconds of him recognizing that Conor was in trouble.
Right.
Give him huge respect for that, massive respect for that. The real question now is, well, what happens with this division? Khabib is still sort of in limbo. I mean, he kind of retired, but he said that, you know, if the right guy shows up, I'll fight him. Unfortunately, is Dustin Poirier the right guy? I don't think so, because both Poirier's and McGregor's last loss was to Khabib.
Wow.
So even with that fantastic win, there's no reason for Khabib to come back to fight him. The real interesting bout was Michael Chandler versus Dan Hooker. Chandler won in ridiculously convincing fashion. He was not in trouble for 5 seconds of that bout. You're talking about a guy that on paper looks like would be a difficult challenge for Chandler to deal with. Significantly taller, significantly better reach. He's been in a number of wars against top competition, has one of the best takedown defenses in the lightweight division. Everything about that matchup said this is going to be rough for Chandler. This is a rough first test to come from Bellator champion to your first fight in the UFC, and they hand you a guy that on paper looks like your nemesis. And it wasn't even close. It wasn't close. I did not know Chandler had that much power in his hands.
Now, that's interesting. Do you think it helped Cobb that Chandler trained with some of these guys in the UFC before the Hooker fight? I'm talking about when he would be a sparring partner for guys who were already in the UFC.
Oh, yeah. No, he's got experience with a number of UFC veterans. And he's got a fantastic fight camp, right? Like great coaching, right? Great trainers. And he's been in this seemingly forever because he started off as a, you know, Division I wrestler. So he has the experience. It wasn't like this isn't some guy coming into the UFC being like, I wonder what I can do here. He knew full well he had the tools to have some success in the UFC. I wanted to see him win this fight. I just didn't expect it to be that easy.
Right.
Right. And I love the fact that at the end of it, they're saying, you know, great debut in the UFC. Who do you want to fight? And he was like, I know Khabib wants his 30th win. So why not try and get it against me? And honestly, looking at that skill set, even though we saw a small piece of it, the combination of his size, his phenomenal wrestling background, and the power in those hands, like, I can't believe how well he clocked. It was like a one-punch knockout, realistically. He clocked Hooker. That he has a skill set that would make for an interesting match, potentially, against Khabib. Only I would like to see him fight at least one more person before that becomes an option.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to join the Pro Sports Podcasters Facebook group, where you will be able to interact with the hosts and talk to other sports fans. Now back to the show.
Whenever we get talking about hockey, the subject always switches to the Toronto Maple Leafs. And in this case, former coach Mike Babcock. And Justin filled me in on a story about him that I hadn't heard before that we think you might find quite interesting.
This is Babcock. Babcock has basically called them in when they got eliminated.
Yeah. And he was there. He was the coach, right? So, like, whatever. After they got eliminated, like a day or two, something after, he has a meeting with them, all the players, individually.
Okay.
But he makes Nazem Kadri, who at that point was the third line centerman, come in last, right? And that's just whatever. And he said, everyone who came in, he said, I want you to tell me what was the reason that we were eliminated and who needs to step their game up, right?
Okay.
And Mitch Marner was first. So Mitch Marner was like, oh, you know, lack of defense, blah, blah, blah. And then Babcock said, I want you to write Nazem Kadri's name on that board. So he wrote Nazem Kadri's name, right?
But he didn't know why.
He didn't know why. He was just like, write Nazem Kadri. And he was like, oh, okay. And Mitch Marner knew that Babcock had a degree in psychology. So what he thought was going to happen was it'd be like, he writes Nazem Kadri. Whoever comes in, like Austin comes next, writes whoever. Like everyone was going to write a different person. And at the end of it, he was going to be like, everyone is responsible. That's what he thought was going to be, right?
So he tried to second guess his game, basically.
Kind of. So that's what Marner thought. So Mitch Marner, whatever, wrote Nazem Kadri and like just wrote it down. And then he asked everybody to, like, whatever. Matthews came in and then he said, you know, Matthews, write a tick under Nazem Kadri's name. And when it was done, Babcock made everybody write a tick under Nazem Kadri's name. And when Nazem Kadri came in and saw that, Babcock was like, you're the reason why we didn't advance.
So basically, he already decided that Kadri was the problem.
Yeah. But he wanted to make it seem like it was the team who did it.
That's brutal. So that's almost like trying to run him out of town.
Yeah. That's fucked, right? Yeah, so
significantly.
When the owners found out about that, needless to say, Babcock was fired. And some type of, like, I don't want to say assault took place, but it was like abuse, mental abuse for sure. And now they're talking about bringing Babcock back, like not to the Leafs, but to NHL. Because right now he works as an analyst for NBC or something.
Okay.
We're discussing when and where he would come back. And just throwing names out there in years. Some people say it would be 2 years. Some say it would be next year. Some say never. I personally don't think he's ever going to come back to the NHL over what he did. However, I can see him going to like a tier two, like AHL maybe, or over in Europe. But I cannot see him returning to the NHL after he fucked up royally the way he did.
You know, it's funny, though, especially in the major leagues, any of the big leagues, a lot of coaches get a pass. You know what I mean? Like, you can mess up big once.
Yeah.
And then they sort of scold you. But because you're already sort of a member of the club, you know what I mean? They'll bring you back in and give you a second chance. And I've seen that happen in any of the major leagues, right? You're talking football, baseball, hockey, basketball. You can mess up big as a coach one time, and then they send you somewhere else, right? Or they punish you for a couple of years, and then you're given a second chance, and hopefully you learn from the first situation. Some of them do, some of them don't. Some of them are just stuck in their ways, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, I'd never heard of that story. That's severe, man. That is really severe, especially at that level. I mean, I could see you doing something like that as a mind game early on, developing a player, and then you kind of clue them in on it afterwards, right?
Yeah.
But when you're a professional hockey player in the NHL, mm-hmm. and your coach pulls that bullshit on you, man.
Yo. So I didn't know about that. Like, I didn't know that happened until it was on TSN when Babcock got fired and more stories were coming out over his abuse.
Yeah.
Because essentially that's what it was like mental abuse. And Mitch Marner had told that story. So it came from the horse's mouth. At least he's like, yeah, I was the first one to come in. He asked me to write it down. And then Austin Matthews came out and he was like, yeah, I'm not exactly the biggest fan of Babcock. Like, he treated me well, but I didn't like how he treated other people, kind
of
deal.
Speaking of the Leafs, though, obviously, I would say the largest offseason acquisition would be Joe Thornton.
Oh, God, yes.
And now he's gone down with a rib injury.
Yep.
And to a certain extent, I'd say probably the majority of fans expected him to miss some time during the season, given his age and previous injuries.
Of course.
But this is pretty quick.
It is.
Right?
It's unfortunate.
In a shortened season, like, I don't know. Would you even say that he had gelled with his line yet or no?
Oh, God, no. Like, they were still bouncing him around. When they first started, he was in the first line as a winger, and then he would drop down for a brief moment to center line, second line as a center. And now, I think he just plays on any line that Sheldon Keefe throws him. Like, whatever he's supposed to start, he doesn't end up there midway through the game. I've seen him on the third, I've seen him on the second, I've seen him back on the first. And that's what you get for being a good player who's diverse, who's been around a while. You can fill in when somebody's having an off night. Joe Thornton is like the gopher, but also the goat. So he's just that powerhouse that they needed for a long time. And not to just credit him, but also our defenseman, Ben Simmons, right? Like yesterday, he had a beautiful shot on goal. Unfortunately, it was saved by the goalie. However, he didn't rifle it the second he got the puck. He held onto it for a clearer opening. Granted, it didn't go in, but it's something that he has to teach the younger defensemen to do, because I find some defensemen are almost run and gun and shoot. And that's where I think Joe Thornton and Ben Simmons are most vital, is part of the mental game and that they bring the veteran leadership. So to lose one of your vets, to essentially lose your grandfather, if you will, it's going to be troubling. It's going to be a nuisance, and it's going to be difficult for them.
Yeah, and it sounds like the way they bounced him around is probably looking for matchup opportunities against whatever team they're playing against. So everyone knows that he's not the fastest guy in the world anymore, but if you match him up against a somewhat slower line,
yeah,
then you can get sort of certain advantages with him on the ice than you wouldn't have even with a faster skater. So yeah, I think it's going to be a tough loss for the Leafs to deal with right now, especially because it's so early and the lines weren't really set yet. I think they're still juggling them around, and they're going to have to juggle some more.
I totally agree. To further your point, Joe Thornton and Mitch Marner have a very similar playing style in the sense that they like to create the opportunities. They can score, but they're much more of they can make something out of nothing kind of deal. So when they originally paired Austin Matthews in the center with two people who like to create on the sides, that in theory, that was kind of, it was good, but it was also troublesome because you didn't know who was going to create versus who was going to go shoot. And I don't know, I feel like that's a line that they want to work with and develop more. And they can't do that now for at least 4 weeks, possibly six with his injury. But one thing I will say about Joe Thornton is he has scored for the Leafs already, and it was a beautiful goal. It was a snipe celly. And he is really, really good at knowing where to put the puck and how to put it there. So you're losing not only a creative figure, but you're losing a veteran player, and you're losing somebody who could generate offense. His defense is whatever. It's what you expect from a 41-year-old. But I don't know if Toronto will be able to handle that come tougher teams like Montreal.
Now, speaking of Montreal, you got a prediction about that, don't you?
Oh, I was hoping you'd lead me into that. All right, ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't heard the name Pierre-Luc Dubois, let me fill you in real quick things on this guy. He's a 22-year-old center, right? He plays for the Columbus Blue Jackets. And as far as I'm aware, this gentleman, this 22-year-old, does not want to sign with Columbus anymore. Columbus has offered him deals, and he keeps saying no. In a very almost Canadian polite way, he's like, I really don't want to play here anymore. You can keep offering money, but I'm going to reject it. Yeah. As opposed to just being like, no. He's like, you can keep trying, but no. So various sources that I've been reading about have different predictions on where he is going to go. And obviously Toronto is a spot he could go, but I feel like Toronto won't do that just because the salary cap issue, and we all know with COVID, it's now lessening the cap, but there's rules and regulations around that, which I'm not going to get into right now, but basically Toronto cannot afford to sign anybody new without giving up somebody, and Toronto doesn't want to do that right now. So I don't think Toronto's going to get it, but now it's going to come down to Montreal and Winnipeg. Those are the top two teams in the running. And I just got a message right now, Jets trading Patrick Laine and Jack Rosenlick for Pierre-Luc Dubois. So he didn't even go to Montreal. He went to the Jets.
Talk about right at the moment, eh? Like right at the moment.
10:43.
We are currently recording this episode at 10:43, January 23rd, 2021. So as we were talking about it, the decision comes through, and I would say, I would give you half points. You were half right. I know you were leading toward Montreal, but Winnipeg was an option,
yes.
And Winnipeg it will be. Do you think that strengthens them, or what do you think it adds to the Winnipeg Jets?
So Laine was a winger. A damn good winger. He came second after Austin Matthews in that year, that draft pick.
Okay.
But Laine has lost his form. It's going to for sure add depth to Winnipeg now. And that's a team I fear even more in our division, given the fact that we faced them multiple times this season. By we, I mean Toronto. That they faced them multiple times this season because it's a northern division. So looking at the lineup, we have Kyle Connor on the left wing. Mark Scheifele in the center, and then we have Blake Wheeler to your right. Awesome. Now, if you're going to have Pierre-Luc Dubois come in, and he's a center by nature, I don't think he's going to start in the starting lineup. I think he's going to go into the third, knocking Adam Lowry down to fourth, which then sticks Trevor Lewis on the bench. But now with that being said, real quick, I can definitely see the growth in Pierre-Luc Dubois moving up and then Paul Stastny down. So that makes that team would be Andrew Kopp, Luc Dubois, and then Elhers on the right. And that would just be a disgusting lineup. Even if you have Mark Scheifele, you wouldn't have Mark Scheifele though. You wouldn't switch him at a first unless he's injured. But if those are interchangeable, I think they're going to have a center one and a center two, or like a center A, center B, like Toronto have with, Matthews and Tavares. Oh, that's so beautiful.
Yeah, I was going to say that it actually allows them to match up better against the Leafs.
Which is going to be, it's going to make for great hockey, and I'm getting goosebumps and chills thinking about this. Ooh, when does Toronto play Winnipeg? And I feel like, but unfortunately, Pierre-Luc Dubois is probably going to have to isolate for 14 days.
Oh yeah, right? He's going from bubble to bubble, so I guarantee they're going to have to isolate him for a while.
Yeah, they're going to have to. That's... Can you imagine if Toronto got him, though? Like, they wouldn't, given the fact that that's the salary cap issue. And who are they going to give up? Joe Thornton? Fuck no, they just got him.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
Ooh, Toronto doesn't play Winnipeg for a while. Yeah, until March 9th. Oh.
Well, there you go. Then he'll be a part of the lineup guaranteed by the time they play.
Yeah, as long as he doesn't have any injuries. Ooh, and Joe Thornton will be back, too.
Don't jinx it.
I know. I don't want to jinx it.